President Bush's campaign team has accepted three face-to-face presidential debates, clearing the way for the contest to begin next week. A fourth debate will feature the two major party candidates for vice president. Joining us to talk about the debates and why they matter is NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne, who is traveling with the president's campaign. Good morning, Don.
Hi, Steve.
So it's the other fall classic, not the World Series, but debates here.
Exactly. The debates will take place over a two-week period starting September 30th. That first debate, that one's been designated to cover foreign policy and homeland security, will be held in Coral Gables, Florida at the University of Miami. The second will be in a town hall style format, so more informal questions from the audience. That one's set for St. Louis's Washington University, October 8th. The third and final presidential debate will be in Tempe at Arizona State University, October 13th. That one looking at the economy and domestic issues, and there will be one debate featuring the vice presidential candidates. That one's in Cleveland, and it's set for October 5th.
And we mentioned that President Bush's campaign team accepted this slate of debates. John Kerry had accepted them some time ago, and President Bush's campaign has now signed on. And there will be just two candidates at these debates, correct?
No Ralph Nader. There's something called the 15% rule. It's a big hurdle for a third party or an independent candidate to clear, but that's the standard. You have to be at 15% in accepted polls a week prior to any of these debates, and right now only Mr. Bush and Mr. Kerry qualify under that standard.
So how much do these debates matter anyway?
Well, they matter the world to John Kerry. This could be his best opportunity in the remaining 6 weeks, which is also in part why it took the Bush campaign a while to agree on all three. There was a sense that perhaps three debates, especially one in the town hall format, could give Kerry too many chances. So they could be very significant.
Now, of course, you get some sense of the importance of these debates by the incredible detail in the 32-page agreement that the two campaigns reached. I want to run through some burning questions here, Don.
Okay.
First off, how do they decide which candidate gets to speak first?
You used a baseball analogy, but it's actually a coin toss. So we're kind of talking football. A coin toss 72 hours before the first debate, and the winner can choose whether or not to take the first question or give the first or second closing statement, or I guess have the wind at their back. For the October 8th debate, the loser of the coin toss in the first debate gets the choice for that one.
More crucial details. Can the candidates use props or charts?
They cannot use props or charts or diagrams or any writings of any kind, nor can they reference anybody who happens to be in the debate audience. They can't point out someone out there as they're driving home a particular point.
Can they bring pens or pencils to the debates?
Pens or pencils of their choice are okay, but it must be approved, and they will be allowed to take notes during the debate with those pens or pencils on the size and color paper each prefers. But all paper, all pens must be submitted in advance, and debate commission staff will place all of that stuff on the podium before the debate starts.
We could go on for some time with these details, but just very briefly, why so much detail on this agreement?
Nobody wants any surprises. There's another rule that says you can't come out from behind the podium and walk up to the other person, as Al Gore did in the debates 4 years ago. Everybody wants to control as much as they possibly can.
Don, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
That's NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne, who's traveling with the Bush campaign.